We're actually using a combination of different strategies, and the buyer or the seller is actually taking payments over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So over a course of 5 years, you can get $2.1 million. And then there's some additional tax savings that we found in there over time. So he's getting a little bit more cash flow from that standpoint. So after just coupling a couple of our strategies together, instead of walking away with $7.3 million, he walks away with $10.6 million.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
But whatever nickel dime bullshit you pulled in the past, this is more than just me. This is pension plans, payrolls. This is $600 million.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
So Mark, one of the conversations we have all the time, I think I've probably had at least 3,000 of them, is that it's not about how much you sell your business for. It's about how much you get to keep. And I understand you had Shannon Stewart on the line on the podcast and went through a lot of the different scenarios about the different types of transactions and which one might be more beneficial than sort of an all cash deal to help buyers out, or I'm sorry, sellers out in the process of keeping as much money as they can after a sale.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting discussion because I think a lot of sellers get to the point where they've been putting their money into the business, right? They've been growing their business over many years, and they look at that sale as their opportunity to finally cash out and to take that money off the table and be rewarded for all their hard work, and they should be. But, you know, there's this pesky little thing called the federal government and state government, and they want to take their share.
It's getting bigger all the time. It's not little at all. It's bigger and bigger. Okay, I'll stop.
Well, no, you're right. And look, you know, you go into this process. Actually, it's funny, Joe, you and I were talking to Ryan Tansom about this yesterday. And he was saying how he puts people through this exercise of here's what your net proceeds are from the sale. And let's go run through some scenarios. And it's eye-opening for a lot of sellers. Shannon is a tax specialist, and she specializes in acquisitions and saving sellers money on taxes. And she makes the claim that she can actually structure a sale where the seller is going to pay 0% taxes. She and I went through a lot of different scenarios. I want you to listen to this and tell me how many times you heard my mind explode from just some of the things that she suggested in here. I think from a perspective of structuring a sale, she offers a lot of great tips and things to think about rather than saying, I just want to get my cash and move on, but ways that you can protect your investment, get more money off the table. Here's the tease, here's the hook, and then we'll get right into it. We use a case study in here on an $11.6 million sale where she was able to increase the net proceeds by over $3 million on an $11.6 million sale, net proceeds by over $3 million, a 46% increase in the net proceeds on that. Remarkable stuff.
Yeah, look, full disclosure to everybody listening here. I talked to Shannon a year ago, and gosh, it just sounded amazing. So amazing. It felt too good to be true. And then we things fell off and we didn't get a chance to follow up. Mark had the opportunity to follow up and chat with her and get some of the real hard, cold hard facts on the process and the benefit of different types of structures than just all cash. As a seller, everybody says, I want all cash. Mostly because you don't know who your buyer is and you're not going to trust them until you get to know them. It's great to keep an open mind because ultimately what you want is to keep as much of your proceeds as possible. You'll have a great attorney working with you on that asset purchase agreement to make sure it's secure and safe in the event you take a non-all-cash deal. We'll refer a few out if needed. But it's a great idea to listen to the entire podcast for both buyers and sellers. Buyers, you're out there listening, you're learning, and you might be buying a business that's not going to be $8 million like the example that Mark is talking about. You might buy something for $500,000 or a quarter or just $1 million. Just $1 million. I should stop that. Or $1 million. And
just $1 million. Just throwing around $1 million. It's chump change for you, right?
Brad sold one that was $40,000. Everybody that is listening to this, you saw the launch. It was a one-to-one multiple, $40,000, which is exceedingly small for us these days. But he had 20, I talked to him this morning, he had 25 offers on it and over 500 inquiries. Not just the automated inquiries, but directly to his inbox too. It was a frenzy. And it's, I think it launched on Tuesday and today's Thursday and it's already closed, that type of situation. But buyers, you're buying these businesses no matter what size and you're growing them. You're taking it to another level that the person that's selling it could not, because they reached their threshold for staff and management or their own level of incompetence, as we often say. You got to figure out what your own level of incompetence is. And they decided to exit. You're stepping in because you've got a different either level of working capital to help grow that business and expand SKUs or buy more inventory, or you're better at scaling from, you know, 20 million to 100 million or 1 million to 10 million, whereas the seller is not. So this is great for both buyers and sellers is my point. And I'm excited to listen to it myself because my level of incompetence is all about what you're left with after the sale. So I'm going to learn a ton as well. So thank you for following up with it, Mark, and getting on the podcast.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, what is your level of incompetence?
Don't it's answer. A long list. We don't have time for that.
Yeah, what's my level of incompetence? No, don't answer that either.
Let's talk to Megan about that.
Right. Let's get to this episode. She talks a lot about preparation. If there's one takeaway for people, both on the buy side and sell side, and we had Joseph Harwood on a few episodes ago talking about how he saved a ton of money on the sale of his business, is be open to different structures. Even from a brokerage standpoint, I know you and I, Joe, like, hey, we actually like these cash deals because they're really simple. But when we're looking at saving hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's worth looking at some alternative structures. And it doesn't get too complex with the right preparation. And that's a lot of what Shannon suggests here is prepare before you sell.
Gosh, that sounds familiar. Please, everybody, plan your exit. Prepare before you sell. If I had a drum, I'd be beating it right now. One last thing before we go to this amazing podcast with amazing information that you're going to learn. I don't like ruining people's weekends, months, years, when I tell them, man, you're doing 10 million in revenue. That's great. And based upon the P&L you gave me, it looks like you're probably worth about 6 million, but everything is wrong. So you have to go back to the drawing board and start over in terms of your financials. I don't like doing that, and I did it recently. So please prepare, plan. Don't wake up and decide to sell your business when you're emotionally toast and you want to move on. If you plan it in advance and you do the four pillars, but the fourth one we're talking about now, which is documentation and planning, get that done. You will make so much more money and you'll have so much more peace of mind in the process. And after listening to the podcast, you'll have so much more money left over in the bank, because you get to keep more of it with the structure and deal size that Shannon's talking about. So let's go to it.
Shannon, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I know you and I have just recently met, but I'm really, really excited about this conversation because you and I talk only briefly. I think we talked just for a little bit on the phone, and in just about 10 minutes, you opened my eyes to some awesome strategies that sellers can use to reduce their tax burdens. And look, I've dealt with so many sellers who go to their accountants and say, what is my tax burden? Oh, here's what it's going to be, 22% or whatever of cap gains tax. And I said, well, what can I do to reduce that? They're like, it really can't, suck it up and pay for it. And you're like, No, that's not the case.
Exactly.
So let's start out with just kind of a quick introduction of yourself. Why don't you tell everyone who you are, the firm you work for, and kind of what your mission is?
Yeah. So I am the chief strategist here at Advanced Accounting. And we are a little bit different than your average tax professional. We actually do proactive tax planning for our clients. And so what we do is we want to help you mitigate those taxes before you actually have an occurrence of a sale. And then even on the back end, we can help you after you've actually sold the company as well. That's not as advantageous for you, but we really like to be proactive. And that's what we're going to talk about today is how do we, after we, hopefully made a profit on the sale of our business, how do we keep the IRS from getting a slice of our hard work legally?
Legally, right? Now, that's the big thing. You know, my eyes were open on a recent transaction that we did here at Quiet Light. In fact, we had Joseph on, who was the seller in that case. And it was a little bit of a different deal because he was a UK-based seller. Mm-hmm. But we brought in a tax specialist on that deal who ended up saving gobs of money. I mean, significant amounts of money from him from a tax perspective. And so to be able to talk to someone like you who does this as a specialty is going to be really exciting. So let's start off real quick with this. And just a point that I know you made to me before our call here, which is whenever there's money changing hands, the IRS wants a slice of it, right? They're going to get something of it. What would you say to the tax professionals that are saying, just suck it up and pay it?
Yeah, you know, I actually was talking to a tax professional the other day, and he was like, well, nothing's certain in life but death and taxes. And just be thankful you're not dealing with death. And he said, you know, there's a cap on capital gains. And I was like, right, there is a cap on capital gains after the seller, you know, sells his company. But there's actually a way that we can mitigate taxes, reduce them dramatically, and sometimes even eliminate them, which is like, everyone's like, excuse me, how can that possibly
work? Yeah, excuse me, wait, we can eliminate taxes on the sale. Okay, I'm intrigued.
You've caught my attention now. And of course, you know, one of the things that when we're looking at the IRS code, there was a senator that once I heard quote that the first 9 pages of the IRS code is all about the definition of what is income. And then the rest of the code is just a web of preferences and deductions and how to actually work the code and work income. And so when we're talking about tax planning, that's where we're talking about really being proactive so that we're not giving the tax professional who just says, oh, you just got to suck it up and deal with it. You know, you're going to pay capital gains and don't worry about it. It's cost of doing business. And that's not the truth. It's not, you know, taxes can be legally mitigated. And if you have enough knowledge, that knowledge is power and can really put more money into your pocket.
All right. So the first 9 pages just define what income is. Do you know how large the tax code is? How many pages?
You know what? After the new revision, I really don't know. I think that it's thousands and thousands of pages.
So there's a lot in there. And, you know, I met with some tax professionals personally recently for just my own benefit. And we went over that conversation with them, which was, hey, look at all the things that you're basically handing over to the government where legally you don't have to if you're doing these different things. And it's more than any one of us can really decipher on our own, right? Because I don't have time to sit there and read and then stay up to date on all of this. All right, so where do we start?
And I don't mean to bash any type of tax professional, because keeping a taxpayer in compliance in and of itself is a full-time job. So what we're doing is really, by being proactive, this is a specialty from that standpoint. So I think the first thing that we start about is we talk about how does capital gains really work? Because that's what happens when you sell your business. You actually have a capital gain. So the methodology is buy low and sell high and pay the tax on the difference. And that's the whole concept, really, in 9 words. But really, taxes are never just as easy as just that, you know, buy low and sell high. The first thing that you have to understand is what your basis is. And basis basically is, what did I actually purchase my business for, or what did I invest into my business? Sometimes we call it original basis or adjusted basis. So basically, it's just anything I paid for the asset and anything I added to it. So we have to understand what our basis is when we ever go into a sale. In fact, the IRS has a 13-page document just on basis. So you can, if you're really excited about basis, you can read, you know, the 13-page document on.
I can say I haven't been really excited about it, but I am now. Right. How would you how would you deal with basis in a startup situation?
So basically, a lot of service-based businesses are going to have zero basis. That's one of the things that we deal with on a regular basis, is that there is no basis. You know, you started an Amazon business and you really have no assets to speak of. And so, unfortunately, your basis is zero.
Okay. What can you count as part of basis? What qualifies as that?
So equipment would qualify. If you purchased a building, you know, sometimes depending on the business, it could be that you've added furniture and fixtures and things of that nature.
What about things like molds for those that are making their own products?
Exactly. So anything like that. So anything like if you have a mold or sometimes depending on the patent, copyrights, things of that nature can be the basis if you're actually transitioning it to another business.
For those that are not in e-commerce, let's talk about like a content site. A lot of content sites are start out by hiring a bunch of writers to build kind of a foundational amount of content on their site. And that can be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of content being written. Could that qualify for basis?
It could. It depends on how it was expensed. So sometimes accountants can be creative in the way that they're expensing things. So really, basically, when we're getting ready to do a sale, we have to look at the balance sheet and determine what's been depreciated. So basically, if you're depreciating it, then that's part of your basis. If it's just been completely, so if you've hired a copywriter and you've expensed that, then it's not going to be considered basis.
Oh, I get it. And this is one of those things, we talk about this all the time on this podcast. We talk about making sure you understand your own financials. And so many entrepreneurs are really weak in this area. We look at the balance sheet as this kind of cryptic report where we don't really understand it. And then there's also this idea of, well, I want to expense as much as I can, reduce my income tax burden. Yeah. But this is looking at it a little bit different. So if I were to start up a content site and I realize, look, I'm going to invest $50,000 into seed content, mm-hmm. you're saying, look, from you might initially I might not be making any money anyways. So mm-hmm. maybe it's better to put that in and record that as an asset investment that I can depreciate.
Right. And see, that's one of the things you always want to think about the end in mind. You always kind of want to like look at what is my exit strategy? Even when you're starting a business, you want to look at what your exit strategy is to determine. And in those early years, I mean, most businesses in the first 3 to 5 years are not really making a huge profit. And so I look at different expenses, and really a lot of those can be capitalized over time instead of just expensed in that year. And that's something to take a look at. And that's why our proactive planning and understanding your financials become so important.
Yeah. Now, from a buying standpoint, if you're acquiring a business, obviously you're going to capitalize the expense of investing in that business right away. Right? That's going to be an investment. So that's going to form basis, but then also things that you're doing right after as well.
Correct. So anything that's going to be adding value, capital value to that business is something that you're going to want to kind of look at and see, is it something that we should, is it really truly an expense, or is it actually adding a capital value to the underlying business and should be depreciated over time?
Okay. So how does this shake out on a sale basis? Oh, I would know we buy low, sell high.
Yeah.
I imagine there's a simple subtraction coming up here, right?
Right. So, I mean, so basically the difference between the sale price and your basis is where you're going to pay capital gains, but only, and you're not only going to pay capital gains, depending on your filing status, you're also maybe getting hit with something called net investment income tax. And that's a new tax underneath the Obama administration, where they're going to kick in a 3.8% tax for those that are $200,000 of adjusted gross income for individuals and $250,000 for joint filers. And so basically you're going to hit with capital gains and that net investment income tax. And so that can be pretty hefty. And so one of the things when we're talking about mitigating taxes on the sale of a business, pre-planning becomes very important. And one of the things is that if we have enough time before the sale of the business, there's a lot of planning we can do. I mean, there's a few after the sale offsets that we can kind of facilitate to mitigate tax, but it's nothing like the time before the sale. And one of the things is we're going to talk about several different strategies. It's really important to understand that we actually need to start our planning. There cannot be a binding contract. You're going to see me repeat this again. There cannot be a binding contract in place when we start this pre-planning.
So what would a binding contract, again, from a sales standpoint, we're looking at LOI, which is usually non-binding, but then there's purchase agreements, which are going to be binding.
Correct. Exactly. So we even like there to be no LOI, and we want no question by mm-hmm. any type of government organization or court system. So we even tell our clients, even before there's an LOI, we want to have our planning done. So oftentimes when people come to you to sell their business, they know they're going to sell their business. That's the goal. And so that's when the planning should start, right then and there.
Right. And we preach all the time that if you want to sell your business, it's best if you're actually planning 12 to 24 months in advance, because from our standpoint, we want those other metrics that we look at that influence the valuation to be as optimized as possible. So I would imagine this pre-tax planning would also benefit if you're 12, 24 months out.
Well, definitely, because there's a lot that we can actually do in the current years to help them mitigate taxes. But then on the sale of the business, definitely. Now, the quickest we can do this is 60 to 90 days. But one of the things I found is that what we have to do is we actually have to educate our seller on these strategies, because a confused mind always says no. And one of the things we want to make sure is that our clients understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, what the advantages and disadvantages are. So we really start an education process with them, so that they understand exactly, like they could sit down and explain exactly the transaction that's about to happen in their own words and have that confidence.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. All right. So let's get into the example of a transaction here, because let's say that we're knowing that we're going to sell the business. We're getting into this here, and we've already said, okay, we've got maybe a little bit of basis, but we still have a pretty large delta on what we're selling for versus what our basis is. You know, maybe we've been able to form maybe $100,000 basis, but if you're selling a business for $1.5, $2 million, you know, the savings is kind of nominal on that side. Where else should we be looking at here? Maybe, I know we talked a little bit about long-term and short-term capital gains taxes in our pre-call stuff. How does this play into this?
Well, I think one of the things is when we start to look at the fact that we have a capital gain, and that's what we really want, we have to really immediately step in and say, okay, what are the strategies that I can do to mitigate these taxes? So one of the strategies, and we usually use a combination of strategies. So I know you and I are going to kind of break down just the simplified strategies, but oftentimes they're actually strategies that are interwoven together from that standpoint. So one of the strategies we often see is something called an installment sale. And an installment sale is just simply a sale where you receive payments in installments in more than 1 year. And so basically what that means is you sell your business in year one and you agree to take three equal installments over a 3-year period. Now, that works with some people. The advantages are that you're going to defer the gain until you actually receive those payments. So taxes is divided, you know, throughout the years. So for an example, we just did a transaction where, let's say you have a business that you bought for $600,000 and you sold it for $1 million. So 40% of your sale is a gain. Mm-hmm. So when you receive those installment payments over the years, 40% of each of those installment is going to be taxed as capital gain. So why is that important? So a couple of different reasons. It's going to actually, if you split out the capital gains over 3 years or 5 years, you actually reduce the overall taxation that you're absorbing from that standpoint. And so you're not getting stuffed all in 1 year with a huge, big tax bill, you know, but the devil's in the details with that one, because not all assets are going to qualify for an installment sale. So that's one thing to remember. So anything that's publicly traded is not going to qualify for an asset sale. You also have to, a lot of times we find that, you know, buyers and sellers want to get a really, really low rate interest rate. And so you can't, you have to charge adequate interest to the person who's buying. And if you sell depreciated assets, so let's say you're selling equipment, you have to recapture all of that depreciation and pay ordinary income tax rates immediately. So there's some things where an installment sale works really, really well with, and sometimes it's not going to work really well. But that's one of the simple strategies that we see. Now, one of the problems with that is that you're going to get your income over a few years. Sometimes it's a big deal, and I actually sent you an example earlier, and we can talk about that in a few minutes, where our buyer actually got his money over 5 years, and that worked out perfectly. We were actually able to eliminate the taxation on that, and we're going to talk about that, because that's huge. And he was getting over $2 million a year, so he was pretty happy, you know?
Right, right. So real quick, are you able to reduce the effective rate by doing an installment sale? Obviously, the amount that you're paying in one payment is going to be reduced, but are you able to reduce that rate?
It does. It, we're able to, and it depends on the taxpayer's adjusted gross income, but we are able to reduce the net effect of taxes over the period. And oftentimes when we're talking about that, sometimes depending on the sale, the amount of the sale or the amount of the proceeds, we're able to even get, you know, payments 5 to 10 years out so that we're able to keep that, kind of make an individual pension for that person. And that way they can also do things like delay Social Security and keep their taxes down. And so it really becomes very much not just a planning for the sale event, but planning for the next few years of what happens with those proceeds.
All right. So I already know what most of my clients are going to say with this, which is I don't want to defer my payments because what happens if they don't pay on that? What are my collection options? What are, you know, there's always this worry, especially with internet acquisitions where so much of the business is wrapped up in blue sky, goodwill, non-tangible assets. And so what happens if the buyer runs the business into the ground 2 years from now, they still have, you know, a $400,000 payment. What are my options? So could you escrow those funds up front and pay them out?
So one of the things you could do is actually do a structured sale.
Okay.
And that actually brings in a third party.
Okay.
Okay. So a structured sale is sometimes very advantageous because it actually takes the installment sale tax treatment. It does require a buyer to pay a little bit of cash up front or all of the cash up front. Okay. So basically what you're doing with a structured sale is you're bringing in a third party and you're exchanging your business for a stream of income. So basically what happens is, and let me say, this is appropriate for businesses between the $100,000 and the $5 million. Okay. So if you're over $5 million, it would not work this way. But basically in a structured sale, you're going to negotiate a traditional sale. Your buyer is going to assign their obligation to make payments to an independent third party. Mm-hmm. So there's a lender involved here or an insurance company involved here. And then that third party is going to take that cash. And so you never actually get receipts. So we avoid constructive receipt rules, which would actually make, if we actually took that money in our hand immediately, that would make it taxable immediately. So then the third party now has your cash, and they're going to buy you something like an immediate annuity to start income to you immediately. So you pay taxes on, as you receive those payments over the years, you're going to pay taxes on the capital gains, again, defer it. But this is a way to bring a third party in. It's called a structured sale in order to help mitigate some of that risk.
Okay, so who is this third party company? Like what would be some examples of these third party companies?
So it could be a lender. It could be an insurance company. There are third parties that actually facilitate deals like this.
Okay. And then from the seller standpoint, the benefit here is that they're not having to act as a collector of funds. You have this third party that's doing that work.
Correct. Correct. And so here's something that what we're seeing gain popularity is, so one of the downsides of the most installment sales, either a structured sale or an installment sale, is that you sold your business, you've deferred the tax, but you don't have all your money.
Right.
You have a stream of income, but you don't have all your money. And so one of the things that we have found is that if you're comfortable exchanging your equity in your business for just a stream of income, that's perfect if you don't need it all at one time. But oftentimes I find that entrepreneurs want to go do another venture. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in their blood. They want to close one chapter and start a new chapter. And so there becomes an issue because there's no capital to actually work with unless the sale is, you know, very large. So here, what we're finding is that we can take an installment sale and we can couple it with something called a monetizing loan. Now, this is a complicated concept. It takes months to actually really kind of, we do webinars and PowerPoints to really educate our clients on this. And we bring in the legal team to really explain this, but I'm going to try to kind of be very simple in my explanation. What we do basically is we take an installment sale and we couple it with a monetizing loan. And so basically the way that this works is we're going to defer the taxes for 30 years.
Okay.
So basically you negotiate a sales price with your buyer, just like you would. Okay. And when it comes time to close, there's going to be simultaneous things that happen at closing. You're going to sell your assets to an unrelated third party in exchange for a lump sum payment in 30 years. Step one, that third party simultaneously sells your asset to the buyer in exchange for your agreed upon price. Now you sold your asset, You're going to use installment sale treatment to defer the tax, mm-hmm. but you still don't have your money. Okay. Here's where the monetizing loan comes in. At the same time that you and the third party and the buyer close the original sale, the third party lender is going to step in and he's going to extend to you a loan equal to 93.5% of the sale.
Okay.
Okay. So remember, loan proceeds are not taxable because they come with an obligation to repay.
Right.
Now, you have your cash in your hand, an amount almost equivalent to what you had for your sales price, and you're free to do whatever you want with those funds. Now, it's a loan. While that loan is outstanding, the third party pays the interest. In fact, the terms of the loan specify that the interest is non-recourse to the seller, which is really important because non-recourse means that the lender can't come after you for the payment of that interest. So 30 years goes by, you have all of your money, you do whatever you want with it. And at the end of the 30 years, the whole transaction unwinds. The third party pays you or your heirs the purchase price in cash. You use the proceeds to repay the loan, and then you pay the tax. So there's some magic that happens here. I always call it the eighth and ninth wonder of the world, tax deferral and the time value of money. So the question really happens to be, what's going to be the tax in 30 years?
Right.
So if inflation, so if you think about this, if inflation continues at 2.5%, that's kind of what it's been for the last 20 or 30 years. If it continues and long-term capital gains remains at 20%, the tax bill on $1 million of gain in 2019 would be equivalent to about $94,000 in 2049.
Wow.
That's less than half of today's bill, tax bill, and you've got to use your money for 30 years.
Right. So with this, with the installment sale and monetizing loan, you still get that money up front. It's just coming in a different vehicle. It's coming through essentially a loan, right?
Correct.
But my mind is spinning right now. And you said earlier, confused mind say no. My head is a little bit confused right now, but I'm seeing where you're going with this. This is really, really brilliant. What are some reasons why people both on the buy side and sell side wouldn't want to do this other than confusion of the concept?
Well, and you know what, really, so oftentimes we get clients who are like right in the middle, like I've got an LOI, I want to sign, I need to do something now. This structure takes a lot of time to explain and mm-hmm. to be comfortable with and to show how all of the numbers move. Okay. So really, what are the downsides of this? Confusion. That's probably the number one thing, or lack of understanding of how it can really, can this really work? Mm-hmm. I mean, people are like, really defer taxes for 30 years. They're skeptical of lenders sometimes that would actually be, you know, extending the loan. So there's a lot of skepticism, I think, and lack of understanding. But really, this is a win-win for everyone involved. I mean, really, the buyer doesn't care. The buyer's going to get his asset and he's going to walk away and he's going to have his new business. So the buyer doesn't care.
And they're paying just as they normally would if they're buying the business up front, right?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The seller, sometimes they don't understand. But I mean, there's legal agreements in place between around the loan. I mean, it's a you're making sure that you're working with a reputable third party from that standpoint. So you're making sure that, you know, the loan is non-recourse, that and how it's going to unwind. And of course, you're going to have your own attorney look at all of the documents and paperwork as well. I mean, so basically you're doing your own due diligence, but any tax professional that's utilizing these kinds of strategies have done their own due diligence as well. And they're picking a third party to actually work with that and a lawyer or legal team to work with that's what they specialize in.
Right, right. How do you handle this with more complex sales where you have a portion of like an equity rollover, cash up front, and maybe, you know, some debt as well coming in there? Can you structure this as a component of a larger structure?
Correct. So that's when I said we often use multiple strategies. So right now I'm working on a deal where someone is selling a restaurant franchise along with the real estate that franchises sit on, and there's debt. And so we're actually restructuring debt to flow through like a different entity on the real estate side so that we can use and monetize installment sales. So we've got like three or four actual strategies that are in play, and that's where the pre-planning comes in. So if we have 12 to 24 months to like sit down with you and figure out a game plan, we can really kind of put several different strategies together. Sometimes we're just deferring the tax, sometimes we're able to eliminate it altogether, but it's just different components of the sale will be treated differently.
All right. So I want to get to our example because, again, I can hear the question in people's minds, which is the juice worth the squeeze here, right? The fees to you, the amount of time, the headache, trying to convince a buyer to do this, which doesn't look as traditional as maybe everyone is expecting going in. So let's run through an example here. And you sent me a PDF with an example. Is it okay if I post this on our site?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so we'll make this available for download in the show notes so that people can follow along with us if you want an actual example of this. But let's talk through the example here that you gave me.
And this is just one. So this is just one strategy. So I just illustrated one. So this was actually a business that's being sold in Michigan. Equipment was included. So they had molds and dies, okay, and they sold on the internet. So they were a combination business. So the sale price was $12 million, and the cost of the sale was about $360,000. They had actually found a buyer outright, but this is what the legal team was kind of charging. So the gain overall was $11.6 million. So at the end of the day, you know, you'll see here underneath projected taxes, we have federal taxes, we have that net investment income tax, we also are recapturing depreciation, and then we have the state tax. So all in, their total gain is $11.6 million, and they're losing $4.3 million to taxes.
Yeah, I can tell you when I sold my business, it wasn't for $12 million. But when I sold my very first business, one of the most sobering moments was getting this first tax bill. And again, just to reiterate this, their taxable gain, so the cost of the sale on this, we have $12 million of the sales price, $360,000 towards advisors and fees here. So 11.64 is what they're gaining after those advisory fees. And then the government at different levels comes in and says, thank you for that 11.6. We're taking 4.3 of that and reducing you down to what, $7.3 million.
Yep. So about $7.3 million is what you're going to walk away with.
Yeah.
Which is still not, I mean, that's not, you know, that's a lot of money, but it can be a lot more.
You're still buying dinner the next time you go out, but right. When you look at 12 million and it gets reduced to 7.3, that's pretty hefty.
So one of the things that, you know, and you'll look here is that we're able to increase this seller's profit by over $3.3 million. And so basically what we do is that you'll see here that the sale price didn't change, the net sales price didn't change. We're actually using a combination of different strategies, and the buyer or the seller is actually taking payments over 5 years. Mm-hmm. So over a course of 5 years, you can get $2.1 million. And then there's some additional tax savings that we found in there over time. So he's getting a little bit more cash flow from that standpoint. So after just coupling a couple of our strategies together, instead of walking away with $7.3 million, he walks away with $10.6.
That's a huge gain. That's that 3.3 million dollars.
A little bit more than $3.3 million.
And because some of that money is deferred now with those deferred payments, you know, you mentioned briefly the time value of money. How do we capture some of that time value of money?
So with those deferred payments, I mean, basically you are actually getting a little bit of an interest rate in that as well. So that's all has to be inside the different strategies. Remember when I said we're doing installment sales, we've got to charge interest and have interest and things of that nature.
It has to be reasonable.
It has to be reasonable. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, over 5 years, you're going to receive that $2.1 million, you know, so this person's giving up, they're comfortable giving up a little bit of return on investment in order to actually eliminate the taxes.
Yeah. And that right there, I can totally see being worth the effort of going through this. And I know, you know, we talk to sellers all the time. They get so nervous about doing installment plans. They want their money. They want their money now. And for a lot of people, especially growing a business, right, they're profit rich, but cash flow poor, where they're showing good profits. Yeah. And the selling moment is the first time where they're really getting to cash out of
their reaping their harvest. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a kind of a hard sell initially to say, okay, I know you're now selling your business for, you know, $12 million, but. Right.
Well, and I think one of the things, like the conversation I have with them when we propose these strategies, because they're, you know, one of the things that we're looking at is, okay, you know, you're used to living on $250,000 a year in income, and now you're going to get $2 million. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, probably blow it.
What's the difference if you are given a check for seven, or you're given a check for two? How is that going to change your day-to-day life? And so that it's a conversation right. You actually have to have. You have to understand what the seller's ultimate goal is. I mean, if it's just to go live on the beach in Delray Beach, Florida, that's kind of my dream, then you can probably do that for $2 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's kind of, you know, and also one of the things, and this was an eye-opening experience for me. I actually had a brother set, and one of the brothers wanted all the money up front, and the other brother said to me, if we don't structure this in an installment sale, my brother will blow through his money, and he won't have anything, because the money burned a hole in the brother's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other brother was willing to, he saw the, both of them saw the validity, but the other guy just saw the big numbers and was like, oh, if I could open up my bank statement and see that money sitting there. And the other brother was like, no, if you do that, if we do that, I know I won't spend it because I will hold on to my money, but you'll go through it and you won't have anything.
Right. And I think something that entrepreneurs need to keep in mind, and I personally went through this myself when I sold my first business, is that a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in the internet space, were bootstrappers. We get things going and we do it with a lot of grit. And then when you come into a lot of money, you try and replace some of that grit with spending. And so the second startup is way more money thirsty than that first one. And if you don't get the right payout, and I've seen it happen with our clients and I had it happen with myself, where that second startup blew through way more cash than I anticipated. So this is kind of a nice little lever on that to make sure you're not blowing through.
Well, it's also a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we see entrepreneurs who actually sell their business and they say, I'm going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And that retirement lasts like a year. And then they're itching. They're like, what do I got to go do something.
I'm bored. I want to do this again.
Right. I want to go do this again. And so basically when we're going into our planning process, not every strategy is going to work for every client, but what we're doing is we're doing a full discovery and we're figuring out what's really important to that seller. And then we are working to mitigate taxes through the legal channels that are available so that they get the best deal at the end of the day.
I want to hit on one last thing on the notes that you provided me here, because we didn't get a chance to talk about it. And that's the charitable strategies section here. And we only have about 5 minutes left here. Yeah. So hopefully I'm not uncovering like an enormous topic that we could have spent.
We could talk all day about charitable strategies.
Well, maybe we'll do a secondary podcast just on that, because that's something that's near and dear to my heart, making sure that as entrepreneurs, we're contributing where we should. But where does this fall into the spectrum of planning?
So basically, charitable strategies is one of the strategies that we use, and it's a foundation of tax planning. It's also a foundation of capital gains planning, and that's because charitable organizations can sell appreciated assets without paying tax on the gain.
Oh, wow.
So, it's a very, very convoluted type of strategy, but basically what happens is you actually establish a charitable remainder trust, and you transfer those assets into the trust. It's important that there's no binding contract before you transfer something into the trust. The trust then sells the asset to the buyer, and that's where the magic happens, because the trust is a tax-free entity. There's no capital gains. And then that trust then reinvests those assets from the sale price, and then it pays you the after-tax amount over a period of time. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's a way that we can eliminate a lot of taxation.
Wow, that is absolutely mind-blowing there. You know, the worry that I think some people would get into is, okay, I know we said this is legal. How much red tape and how fine are the rules that you have to follow for something like that?
So basically, I mean, there are rules. And so, but charitable remainder trust, I mean, you have a legal team that actually specializes in this. Mm-hmm. It's not, you're not going to your mom and pop local lawyer who handles everything from drunk driving to, you know, criminal, you know.
My uncle who's a lawyer are not going to charge me a retainer, right? That type of a deal. Got it.
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is a place where when you're doing these strategies, you want expert advice. You want somebody who has done this again and again and again. and who understands these concepts. And so you're picking individuals that understand how to put together and to write a charitable remainder trust, how to facilitate these third-party transactions.
Got it. Okay, we are up against the clock. Shannon, how can people reach you? Because I guarantee you're going to get a lot of calls and a lot of emails from this. So careful what you're giving out right now. How can people reach you?
So definitely, they can reach me at advancedaccounting.com. In the right-hand button corner, there's going to be a button that says a free consultation. And I would love to have a 30-minute Zoom call with them and just kind of talk them through what their particular situation is and if we can help them.
That's fantastic. We will put that in the show notes, a link over to your website. We'll also upload this really simple example that you put together of tax savings, which amounted to over $3 million in tax savings on a $12 million sale. Really, really interesting stuff. And I think the big lesson that I would like people to come away with is to think about this, about the selling process in a little bit more strategic way, because so many people are just looking at, let's get it simple, let's get it done, let's move on with our lives, I'm gonna eat this fee. There's a lot that can be done by hiring the right people to reduce those fees. You're one of those people for sure that can certainly help. So thank you for coming on. I can see having you on and maybe digging deep into one of these strategies, maybe in a future episode if you'd be up for it.
Perfect, I'd love it.
Awesome, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.